problem. Go. Work it. Yeah. Anytime. Situation. Heat. Work it. Yeah. I don't have no job. Go.
That's literally the lyric. I don't got no job. Welcome, welcome, welcome again to Work It Out with Mercy Quay, the show about what people do for work, at work, and what motivates people to move. Each week, I'm talking to successful people about what they do for work, how they ditch their 9-to-5 to be their own bosses and launch maybe a 24/7. You know how that works, right?
I got you,
yeah. And I'm also talking to folks who have dropped the status quo altogether to carve out their own brand of happiness. Consider this your Monday motivation and your weekly invitation to figure out what motivates you and work it out. Okay, let's get straight down to business. Since everyone's talking about their New Year's resolutions during January, I have dubbed January Fail Month. You like that?
Yeah, I like it. It sounds crazy, but looking at it, everybody's like, what?
Exactly, exactly. But I'm like, you know, everybody is super gung-ho and super hopeful about what their New Year's resolutions are. And, you know, I'm going to be the pessimist of the group. But also a pessimism with a, you know, a little optimistic spin.
Of course.
So everyone I'm speaking to this month has had some kind of fail, right? Something that has been a barrier to success for even just a small point of time. I'm bringing some great stories from some great folks. Last week we talked to Liz Dillinger, who was a vocalist. I don't know if you saw the show last week. Mm-hmm. She was a vocalist. Well, she is a vocalist. She had been a vocalist all her life. And then just like this, like, freak tsunami came along, right? She gets thyroid cancer literally on her, right? Exactly. The place where a vocalist would not want to get cancer. And she really did. She learned how to sing on just that one vocal cord after being, you know, having her vocal cords paralyzed. And now this week we're talking to Tyrell Walden Martin.
What's up, y'all? How y'all doing?
So last night I was like, all right, what do you want me to introduce you as? And he was like, Tyrell Walden Martin, Emmy Award winning producer. I was like, let me
strut my stuff real quick. Right.
Okay.
I was like, it's fail month, so I don't want them to think like I'm failing all the way.
Just exactly. Like all I'm doing
I
was like, is
I got a few wins out here, a little bit.
And so like I said, Emmy Award-winning producer, who his fail story involves a tweet, and we're not going to get into it just yet because I think it's a really, and I was watching it happen real time. Like I was scrolling through the tweets when it was happening real time.
That was nuts.
We're not going to get into it just yet. We're going to start off with tell us a little bit about who you are, what you're doing, and then we're going to transition into telling our viewers what your fail was.
I got you. So I'm Tyrell. I'm originally from the Bronx, New York. I moved out to Connecticut a little bit like after middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get a fresh start. The schools I was getting ready to go into were like a little dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents at the time were just like, you know, they wanted me to see a different kind of, like, you know, living.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of just New York.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time my mom's sisters had moved out here. So she was like, you know, Connecticut's different. You get a fresh start.
It's different.
It's real different. It's real different. You know, I miss New York, you know, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a way different lifestyle out here. So
yeah.
And I recently graduated from Quinnipiac in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get my master's, going into my last semester.
Nice,
finally.
Nice.
And
what's your master's in?
Sports journalism.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I didn't even get into journalism until late.
Mm.
So that's another fail.
Okay, so we rocking up the fails real early.
Yeah, it was real quick. I had a few under my belt.
So right now you're in grad school, and what are you doing? What are you doing for work right now?
So right now I'm a graduate assistant for athletic communications.
Okay.
For Q Athletics.
Okay, cool.
I handle public relations for a few of the teams.
Nice.
Men's soccer. Right now I just took over for women's basketball. It's been a great time.
Nice.
They went to the Sweet 16 last year. So, you know, they get a lot of news, a lot of buzz.
Yeah,
so
it keeps you busy.
Keeps me busy, but I love it. It's a great group, great coaches, great group to travel with.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And so you said you got into journalism kind of late, and sports journalism kind of late. So like, what was that transition like for you, and what were you transitioning from?
Well, I was originally a biomed student when I got to Quinnipiac. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you were gonna say, oh, you know, I was just media studies.
Nah. Full biomed. When I went to high school, I went to Hill Regional Career. Shout out to them Panthers.
Shut up, really? You went to Career?
Yeah.
I went to Career. I didn't know that.
What year did you graduate?
No, we're not gonna talk about that on the air. we're not gonna talk about that on live radio. But shout out to the Panthers.
Yeah, I started at Hampton High and transferred after my freshman year and graduated from Career. So, you know, it was either business or medical there. So I just dove deep into the medical field.
I was business. I was information technology, actually.
I probably should have stuck with that route. So coming from Career, I just felt like I kind of knew everything.
Yeah.
So when I got to school, I had terrible study habits. Mm-hmm. And I just wasn't doing the greatest in my classes. And I was put on academic probation after my first year.
Really?
Yeah. It was rough.
Third fail of the conversation.
Yo, real quick. I told you, they was coming. It was fast. Everything was happening so fast. I just felt like I just didn't adjust well once I finally got to Quinnipiac.
Yeah.
And it was rough. I almost failed out of school.
Wow.
So my junior year.
Yo, we haven't even got to the fail that's getting him feature on Fail Month.
So, going into my junior year, I was on academic probation and I was like, you know, I gotta make some life changes. Mm-hmm. So I had to have a real sit down talk with my parents, especially my mom. And she was like, you know, like, you got to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we didn't bring you out here to do this. You know, you came out here to succeed, you know.
You know what's crazy? I need to pause for a couple seconds because I want to talk about two things. Thing number one I want to talk about is career, but I'm going to get back to that in a second. Thing number two I want to talk about is what you just said about what your mom told you is, like, that's the quintessential, like, immigrant story. And you're not even an immigrant.
No, my mom don't play. Like, you know, like, she's always been on it. And it doesn't help that my sister's, like, a genius. So, and she's, like, under me. So, it's, like, she 2 years behind me. So, it's, like, seeing her get all the A's nonstop. And I'm just, like, A, B, C, 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 D. So, it was tough. So, she sat me down. She was, like, yo, you got to figure it out. And I was just, like, I got to figure out what I'm good at. I was like, I could talk sports. You know, I could walk into a barbershop, you know, talk anything all day, provide stats. But it's like, what can I turn it? Can I put it on paper?
Right.
You know, can I write about it? Can I do all of this? And that's when I was just like, all right, I'm going to take a jump, you know, just switch to journalism and hope I graduate on time.
But did you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's dope.
I became a journalism major entering my junior year. And
what?
Yeah. And
how did you graduate on time?
Summer and winter classes. My mom was
okay, so you graduated with like 360 credits.
Yeah. I went into winter classes, summer classes. I just put my head down and just got to work. My mom was like, you know, this is basically your last chance. Like, get it right. And so I was shook. I was like, I got you. I'm going to get it right.
Oh, my gosh. That's so funny. Like, when I say that's the quintessential, like, immigrant story, right? Like, my family is Ghanaian, right? And anytime I would, like, talk to my dad about my grades over the phone, I'm like, mm-hmm. You know, what'd you get? What'd you get in math? You know, I got a B. Like, whispering it, I got a B. Yeah. and he was like, well, B stands for better do better to get an A.
Yo.
C stands for could have done better to get a C. I mean, could have done better to get a B, mm-hmm. right? So that just sounds like the quintessential immigrant story.
Yo, she was not having it.
That's funny. That's funny.
And it was to the point where she's like, all right, I know you took a test this week. Where's your grade? I was like, Mom, like, I'm not in high school no more. I'm like, I got it now. She's like, prove it. Like, show me.
Oh, no, that's cool. So, you got it. So, show me.
Show me your grades.
So it shouldn't be a problem for you to show me the grades.
Yeah. So
that's funny.
I got it right. You know, that was around the time I started figuring it out. And yeah.
But then you also started a podcast.
That was recently.
Yeah.
That was this year at grad school. I just started listening to podcasts over the years. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, the way I learn, I just have to read and listen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people were introducing podcasts as a new avenue. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know, maybe this is something I could do, you know, a few friends and have fun with it. So, you know, Dora, we asked her to be a host. My friend Justin, who worked with me at The Chronicle.
The Q Chronicle. Q newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he became sports editor a few years after me, and we just have a great bond. It's the Father Son podcast for those who haven't listened to it. It's we just talk music, sports, and just have a lot of fun.
And why'd you call it the Father Son podcast?
Because Justin, when Justin came to the Chronicle as a freshman, I kind of like took him under my wing. He always referred to me as Pops. Oh.
So he was like 2 years under you, but your pops?
Yeah. So he was three, actually.
Three.
Yeah, I was a senior. He came in as a freshman. Mm. And I just showed him the ropes with everything that, you know, everything that I knew. So
it really is like two guys and a girl. So why is it the father-son?
Because we started it before Dora. Uh-huh. And then Dora, I was like, I think we're going to need a female voice. So I was like, I think it would be dope.
Oh, shout out to Equity.
So we reached out to Dora. We're still working on the name. We're probably going to switch it around coming up next semester.
The father, son, and Mary? Is that
featuring Dora?
Right, exactly. I don't know if that flows as much.
We'll figure it out. We got something.
So now that our viewers know a little bit about you, you've cataloged a couple of your fails. I want to get straight to the fail that earned you a spot on Fail Month. Go ahead. Just tell me.
I never even told my mom about this.
Really?
She's going to hear about this for the first time.
Your mom doesn't even. Oh, this is great.
I was like, this was one I tried to, like, you know, figure out on my own. So.
Okay. No. Okay. So back up. We're going to set up the story.
Mm-hmm.
What were you doing? Where were you working? What led up to the fail? All
right. So at the time I had just become, I was under contract with NBC, mm-hmm. As a mobile content producer for the Olympics. I had interned with them during my last semester of undergrad during the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And I went from interning there the entire semester, graduating like that Sunday, like May, whatever. And then Monday they were like, all right, let's go. Like, mm-hmm. throwing you into the fire. Mm-hmm. So it's time to get to work.
Mm-hmm.
They believed in what I could do, and they gave me a chance. And, you know, it was fun. It was dope. You know, so it was weird. Just like it went from being an intern to like just like, you know, full time, like ASAP. So mm-hmm. it was crazy. And so we're just going through the trials and everything, just getting everything together for the Olympics. And so the Olympics come along, and you know, I'm doing what I have to do. I was I was in charge of the Primetime Companion app.
Mm-hmm.
So while everybody's watching the primetime hours of the Olympics, mm-hmm. I was funneling content through the app so that you can have like a secondhand experience, mm-hmm. like first screen experience with the
second screen.
That's what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. So that you could see. So let's say you like. Everything was, you know, focused on Brazil. So I'll put a lot of fun tidbit facts about Brazilian culture.
Nice.
Whatever athletes were appearing on TV, I had different cards, trivia, everything like prepared, ready to go for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, that's what I was doing in my months leading up to the games. And so the games come around, and I want to say we're like about a weekend. And I have been told before to, like, you know, be careful what I do on Twitter. You know, there's
you're
a lot
about
of...
a week into your contract. With
no,
NBC.
A week into the game. So
oh,
I'm about
okay.
About 2.5 months in.
Okay.
So it's like now it's late July, like August. So
okay.
Games are full on. Michael Phelps is doing his thing. And at the time, the Michael Jordan crying meme is everything.
That's a go-to meme, yeah.
All on social media.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, my bosses are always telling me, you know, be careful on what you do on social media. You have a lot of people watching you now, especially with, you know, it being NBC and the Olympics.
Right.
A lot of people don't get, only NBC controls the Olympics. Mm-hmm. They only have they're the ones that have rights,
yeah, exactly,
to the mm-hmm. Olympics. So, I guess like a few other companies could like people headhunt. I feel like some people were headhunting. Michael Phelps is going through his routine. He had that rival Chad Leclos, the guy that was just being all extra, dancing in front of Phelps and everything. And so that was playing well on social media.
Mm-hmm.
So while the games are going on, it's like a little bit of a dead period. I saw this guy, I believe his name was like the Dr. Carson or whatever. He posted a picture of Michael Phelps that just won the race. Chad Leclos was looking over, and he had the Michael Jordan meme, Michael Jordan crying face on.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was hysterical.
Because it was hilarious.
It was hilarious. So I retweeted it first, and then it didn't even like go nowhere. And mm-hmm. then I just was like, yo, yeah, I really have to see this. This is hysterical.
Yeah.
So I just like literally saved the picture and then just put it back out and said, yo, this is hysterical.
Yeah.
So it ended up getting like a whole bunch of retweets. I'm like, okay, like
from your account. Yeah.
He already had a whole bunch of retweets because he had a big following, whatever, because mm-hmm. he was with Fox Sports at the time. He had a big following.
Mm.
So I didn't take all of that into account. And what happened was he called me out and said I was plagiarizing his work. And it wasn't even him at first. It happened to be like one of his coworkers, I guess, or one of his coworkers. And they were just calling me out saying I was plagiarizing. I'm just like, whoa, like, wait, where is all this coming
right,
from? Plagiarize?
Right.
Like, I didn't know you could plagiarize a picture.
Good. Well, and also on social media, where like the retweet culture is It's just that, right? Once you publish a meme, you don't have necessarily
the rights
to where it goes after that.
So I didn't take all that into account. Again, this is me still fresh rail into journalism. Mm-hmm. So I'm not thinking about all of that kind of stuff, especially with Twitter now compared to when I first got on to high school is completely different.
Yeah, it's a different ballgame.
It was a way different ballgame. Mm-hmm. So everybody's calling me out saying I'm plagiarizing, I'm claiming it as my own. And I'm like, whoa, what are you talking about? I never said it was my own. So,
right. But the distinction here, what wasn't his like criticism that you didn't retweet his, that you saved it and tweeted it from your account?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though I had already retweeted it.
Even though you had already retweeted his.
I was following him. Mm-hmm. I was a fan of the guy. The guy was hysterical. Mm-hmm. I loved his memes and stuff. So to see it like just turn around and become all that, I was shocked.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was steaming. I was fuming because I'm like, I'm a journalist. I'm African American. You know, as an African American, you got to work, you know, almost twice
as hard.
Triple as
mm-hmm.
hard
mm-hmm.
to get to where, you know, a lot of other people are.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like if you attack my credibility, especially with somebody of his stature,
that early on in your career,
I'm scared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was shook. So I, instead of just sitting back, letting it go, not responding, just letting it be, I responded. that was my biggest mistake.
Now, this is a masterclass in failure.
Yep.
But I think it also turned out pretty, I mean, it turned out okay. But guys, I'll let you jump into it. So you respond.
So I respond. I'm just like, what are you talking about? How is this plagiarism? He's like, oh, so now you don't know plagiarism. So now he's trying to...
He's baiting you.
He's baiting me.
Mm-hmm.
I fell for the bait. I'm going back and forth.
Wait, literally, I'm cataloging these fails. So far, where are we starting? We're starting at...
We at like 10.
We're at 10 fails.
We're at 10 fails right now. So I'm going back and forth with him now. And then his
And every response is a fail.
Every response is a fail. Whatever you do, don't respond. And then, you know, my friends being on social media, like, a lot of them started coming to my defense, like, this guy's tripping, this guy's tweaking. So I'm responding to them like, yeah, like, I don't see his problem. And then, like, of course, they're pulling that as well. And mm-hmm. I'm not realizing, oh, yeah, you could screenshot.
Uh-huh.
So they were...
11.
Yeah. So I was going back and forth with him and then his coworkers and then a whole bunch of other people. And it just got really bad really quickly. And then I just felt like, okay, I'm cornered. I'm outnumbered. Just stop. Something just said, just stop. And at the time when things were going on, we're working 12-hour shifts at the Olympics. And my shift was like a 12 to midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was prime time, we only had like a few people around us. Mm-hmm. So the building wasn't packed.
Mm-hmm.
My supervisor at the time wasn't even there. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't even like I could go to somebody for help. Because,
mm-hmm.
I'm just like, let me take care of this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I stopped, and it just kept going and going and going. And I was just like, after I clocked out, I just left. I just stopped responding. My mentions are still blowing up.
Mm.
And I'm just like, I'm going to just ignore it. Hopefully in the morning it's over.
There's a little bit of anxiety that comes with that, though.
From that point and over the next, like, 48 hours were, like, the most, like, trying times. Probably, my life. Like, mm-hmm. I was shook. So
it's good that happened so early on in your career, though.
I had to learn.
Yeah.
I had to learn. So I come in the next morning and immediately I'm just like, before it hits my boss's
before you desk, can get to them,
mm-hmm. let me go to him. So mm-hmm. I go to my boss and I'm like, hey, this happened last night. I went back and forth with a few guys from Fox Sports. It was bad. I've since deleted the tweets.
You deleted the tweets.
No, I had to. It was getting bad. But I just went to them and I was just like, hey, like this happened. I already deleted the tweets. I just want to get to you before it comes down, and you know, so you're not blindsided.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, okay, I appreciate your honesty. You know, cool. And he was like, I spoke with people higher up. You're okay. Everything's fine. As long as nothing comes of it, everything will be okay. It'll be cool.
Conditionally. As long as nothing comes of it.
Mm-hmm. So literally 2 hours later, I'm getting texts. Like, my phone's blown up. Everybody's like, yo, are you okay? Like, have you seen? Are you all right? And I'm just not responding because there's a few people that I didn't really like talk to like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was
mm-hmm.
just like, whatever. And then my best friend, Nick, he texted me. He was like, yo, are you all right? And so when I got that text from him, I knew something was wrong.
Right.
So I'm like, what are you talking about? What happened? He was like, bro, you're on awful announcing. And I'm like, oh, man.
So tell our viewers what that is.
So awful announcing is kind of like it's basically like Deadspin, where mm-hmm. it's a media group company that, you know, they cover sports and everything, but they also cover things that happen in the journalism world.
Mm-hmm.
So if something like a guy, like, you know, somebody at ESPN has like a scandal or something, they'll blow it up.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole situation, they blew it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's texting me. He's like, yo, like, it's really bad. Like, it's so he sends me the link and I look at it and I'm like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
And that first article, it wasn't even a long article.
No.
It was a short one.
It was a short one.
Yeah.
And my friend screenshot me and sent me the short one. I didn't see the short one, like, myself. Mm-hmm. I saw the full extent, every detail, everything. So, one of my supervisors, so I get up, I go back into my boss's office and I was like, it became something.
Oh.
He was like, what happened? I was like, it's on awful announcing. He was like, all right, just go back to your desk. You know, I'll just, you know, just stay calm and just whatever. I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting fired.
Can I tell you, like, you know, I wasn't there, but I remember watching all of this unfold. I remember, let me jump in and say, I remember meeting you probably, what, your sophomore year of college?
Yeah, sophomore, junior year.
Sophomore, junior year. I came to Quinnipiac to be a guest on basically like a show you were performing in.
Mm-hmm.
To be a panelist on the show you were performing in. And, you know, Quinnipiac's my alma mater I had graduated a couple years before. I remember meeting you as like a young student at Quinnipiac. And so I follow, you know, from that point, I had been kind of following your career. I was trying to get you connected with the Naval Register, yada, yada, yada,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, while I was not there in the newsroom while this whole thing is unfolding, I'm sort of watching it from afar and I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. It was ugly.
You know that smiley face emoji that everyone is like, is it smiling or is it like cringing?
Yeah.
I was cringing. I was definitely cringing.
Nah, I know a lot of people were. So it was just scary. It was crazy because I just didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what was going to come of it. And I was just like, I just got my degree a few months ago.
Right.
This is going to look like a wash.
Right.
My degree is going to look like a wash. So my intern supervisor, who had always been close to me from the time I got into the building, who I'm still, you know, pretty close with now, he comes over to me. He's like, all right, let's go for a walk. And he's like, you're all right? I'm like, no, like, I'm not okay.
Thanks for asking. No, I'm not.
He was like, listen, like, anytime he always, like, I feel like, his name was Corey. Anytime Corey felt like, I feel like Corey always knew when, like, something was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And he always knew what to say. Like, Corey was probably one of the greatest people I've ever worked for and with.
Mm.
And he just basically pulled me aside. I was like, you're going to be okay. Like, this happens. It happens. It's like, it sucks to happen, but it happens. And only thing you can learn, and the only thing you can do is learn from it. So I was like, what do I do? He was like, delete your account. I was like, but my followers, delete your account. And, you know, like on Twitter, like Twitter is like, as a journalist, like you need it.
Yeah.
At this point, like you need it. So I'm just looking at it like I'm about to lose everything. I'm going to have to start over. But I'm just like, I need to save my job first. Because this is important.
Like, wow! Just like the weight of that, the gravity of delete your account. I'm like, oof.
You see, you feel me? So he was like, you gotta delete it. So I was like, all right. So he was like, just stay off Twitter. Just keep your head low and just, you know, work until my supervisor calls me back in, and you know, we'll go from there. So I take down my account, and my boss calls me. And he's like, I spoke with higher ups. They're like, it's okay. This happens. But, you know, you have a target on your back. Now just lay low, keep your account deleted, and so stay off of Twitter for the rest of the games, which at the time I believe was like, yeah, like 2.5-3 weeks left. So that's still like...
That's substantial.
Mind you, I'm not even going home because we were like going in and out of the hotels because it was just mm-hmm. like, you know, mm-hmm. shuttling back and forth because of the shifts. So I'm just like, I'm in the hotel.
Wait, so the hotel, where were you?
Stanford.
You were in Stanford. Okay, yeah.
Right there in Stanford at the... NBC Sports is right there. So, mm-hmm. and we, you know, we were just at the Sheraton or whatever hotels they had us in. And so at the end of the night, I'm going back to the hotel. I'm like, damn, I really want to get on Twitter.
What does one do?
What does one do?
Late at night.
So, I delete my account. they say, like, you're going to be fine. Just, you know, just keep your head down and work. So that's what I did. And then I see the article, and it's like, now he's deleted his account.
Yeah. Like, oh, I mean, and you know, right, just coming, if I started off in journalism, but now I'm in PR, mm-hmm. and I look at these moments of like actual crisis. I specialize in crisis management, mm-hmm. and I look at these moments of crisis management, and him telling you to delete your account, that was probably the only thing that he could come up with, like just lay low, delete your account, right? Me, had I been consulted on the matter,
I didn't know what to go to.
Had I been consulted on the matter, I would have, and I mean, right, you're not going to take my advice over your boss's advice, so that's one thing, but had I been consulted on the matter, I would have said, deleting your account was going to create another piece of the story, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to add any, right? Like, there's currently a fire going, mm-hmm. and anything you do around this fire is actually putting more wood into it. So deleting your account, putting more wood into it, issuing an apology is putting wood into it, but it's not like, it's like a wet wood where like the fire starts to, you know, die out, yada, 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 like acknowledging that thing. But any other action around the thing starts adding more fuel and wood to that fire.
I think they probably knew that me just like staying off of Twitter would probably be best, mm-hmm. but they also knew I was very impulsive. The interaction went.
Yeah.
So if I would have went and apologized, and the way the guy, his personality was on Twitter,
That would have amped it up.
Mm-hmm. And so I think deleting at the time for me, like for my personal, like,
was the best thing
because I probably would have responded again, mm-hmm. like just off of people just still like going at it and telling me about it. So yeah, so now it's a day later, I'm still like,
and how many articles are out at this time?
I only saw the one.
It was only the one.
It was only the one from Awful Announcing, and then they just kept adding to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I never saw like anything else outside of it.
Okay.
So when that happened, it was just like, I was just like, oh my God, like you Google my name, that's the first thing that comes up. And it still is. But I wear it as a badge, like, you know, like I messed up. Not in the term of I was trying to plagiarize his work, but in the term of I should know better than to like just touch anybody's like content.
Yeah. But also, right, this I mean, and right, I come from a journalism background. This really does, I think, push the conversation around, you know, what's the line of journalism when we are in like a communal share or just like a share economy, literally share and retweet economy, mm-hmm. right? Like what is the line of plagiarism?
I didn't know.
Right? Like you retweeted his work. Memes are, I mean, this is debatable. And I think this is why it's kind of cool that this thing happened in the way that it did. What's up for debate is when is a tweet, or maybe not a tweet, but a meme, for instance, when is that in the public domain?
I feel like at this point, from that experience, I feel like it's never really in the public domain. Mm-hmm. And that's where I messed up, because mm-hmm. when he sent that out, when he had his like picture go out, it had already went viral.
Mm-hmm.
I had seen it before I even saw it on his page for me to retweet it. I saw it on Instagram, like under Hoop Mixtape. Hoop Mixtape had taken it.
So that's exactly my point, right? Like, mm-hmm. He had a watermark on it. Oh, and the watermark was deleted in somebody's,
probably, I don't know how,
copy and paste on it.
Yeah. So
I mean, I guess right, like in copyright law, once something is published, it is officially that person's, right? Mm-hmm. Like it is under that person's ownership. As soon as something is published, right?
Yep.
And Twitter makes it really easy to publish things.
Exactly.
Right? But when, I think it's still up for debate. When is something in the public domain, when you're talking about the internet?
Yeah, right? which everybody has access to.
Right.
So I just feel like it's just a new set of rules that people are still trying to find like the line to where it can cross.
Yeah.
So I just tightrope the line on the wrong side. Mm-hmm. And so I just.
But you went so hard at first.
Yeah, I was going hard.
You were like, but is this plagiarism though?
Yeah. Like I really was. I was really, really being sarcastic. I was like, I can't let them see me get mad. Mm-hmm. I was like, is it really plagiarism? if it's out there, everybody's already retweeted and seen it.
Right.
And I was like, I never claimed it as my own. Mm-hmm. And then what got me upset, and this is how they baited me. They had screenshots of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Even the tweet. They had screenshots of all the tweets I deleted.
Yeah, that's what that deleted tweet piece is. That's also cringeworthy. Yeah.
So they, but what got me upset, and I think what got me to go, like got me on full go mode, was one of the coworkers said he claimed it as his own and deleted the tweet. I didn't get the chance to screenshot it.
So a complete fabrication of what actually happened.
Exactly. So I'm like,
Since there are deleted tweets,
it made it look like right. I had set, but I got upset because I'm just like, you had screenshots of every tweet I had, mm-hmm. except for the one where you said I claimed mm-hmm. it as mine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I was like really upset, because I'm like, now it's going to, I understand, like I take my faults in what I did,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't want to take the fault of like literally plagiarizing and saying I created this.
Yeah.
When I never done that, never, like, you know, left my handle.
Right.
So that just whole thing was crazy. And then, again, a few days later, like, I wasn't even in the Quinnipiac journalism group, but people are texting me like, yo.
We were talking about you.
Yeah. They were like, no, not just you. Like, it was a lot.
No, I'm saying we were all talking about you.
Yeah. And I was just like, okay, wait, time out. People are talking about me. I'm not even in it. Let me get into this group and see what's happening.
it was a debate. We were having a debate around. And so, I mean, for those of you who are not a part of Quinnipiac Journalism Group listening in, right? Like, this is a group of professors and current and former journalism students of Quinnipiac School of Journalism.
Mm-hmm.
We bounce around ideas. We share, work opportunities, employment opportunities, and we talk about current events in journalism. And when it has to do with, you know, an alumni, right? That we jump on that story and talk about all of the various angles of that story,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we did with you.
Yeah.
And this is where like my footing comes from on the fact that like. For the idea, for the argument that this, you actually started a debate. You actually started a real debate about when does something go into the public domain. If that person has had their due credit, you know, it's a viral tweet that it has been credited to this person. At what point does it go into the public domain, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my example here is, right, every time I say that, gravity pulls things down to the ground, I don't have to credit Sir Isaac Newton, right? Like, you know what I mean? So no, at what point does someone's due credit suffice? The credit that they've received for the idea suffice, or for the creation of the content?
I feel like it's just once the creator says,
okay, you can have it now.
Yeah, you can have it. Like, it's out here. Like, and I feel like,
And on Facebook, if you have an idea about that, please comment and let us know. Like, when do you think something that is tweeted or a meme that is created goes into the public domain?
Mm-hmm.
So if you are just listening in, thank you for listening to Work It Out with Mercy Quay. It's a show about what people do for work, at work, and what motivates them to move on WNHH Radio, streaming on 103.5 FM and streaming live. We have a live video going on the New Haven Independence Facebook page and newhavenindependent.org. If you have any questions for Tyrell, go ahead and comment that on the Facebook page. comment that on the Facebook
page. I'm
interested to see what comes in. So what are you doing now? What happened? What was the aftermath of that?
So the aftermath was, you know, I get into the group and I'm just seeing everything. And I'm just like, I'm seeing a lot of people saying, and like, because of this, like, he shamed the journalism program.
I saw that one.
I came
for that one.
Yeah. He shamed the journalism program. He's never going to get a job now. This is what now. And then it was just like people bashing my professors saying, like, this is what you're teaching your kids.
Yeah.
And I took that to heart because it's like, you don't know me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing. I was like, I can understand if people that knew me were like people that know me know I'm not going to copy somebody else's work.
Right.
Like, point blank period. I feel like I'm confident in what I do and what I create, where I can share it with the world and be okay with it. I don't have to take something from somebody else to mm-hmm. make myself feel mm-hmm. better. So I was just like, who are you guys to tell me that I'm never going to get a job?
Right.
And who are you guys to comment my to go at my professors for saying they taught me this. They didn't teach me that.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't teach me that, you know, what I did was wrong. They didn't, because again, it was a situation unlike another.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, you can't go at my professors for something that I messed up with.
Right, right.
You know, like, I'm gonna take that blame. I'm gonna wear that badge.
Right.
So I just didn't like how people were just spreading blame, just trying to, you know, just destroy the credibility of the department because of my mistake.
Right.
So, and it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't even about me. It's just, it was about my school.
So what in the situation would you say was your mistake? Like, I think that there were a couple points, a few points along the way where, you know, you tripped up a little bit. But what do you think was the big mistake that, like,
repurposing it?
Just from the beginning.
Just mm-hmm. taking it and just saving the image and then putting it back out.
Mm.
That was a mistake. Because now that's considered plagiarism.
Mm-hmm.
Back at that time, I didn't think it was plagiarism because I didn't say it was mine. But to take somebody else's photo that they manipulated in their own right and put it back out there, even though I had already retweeted it, that was still wrong to begin with, period. I'm aware of that. Responding. I shouldn't have responded. Outside of an apology, I'm going to delete it. I'm going to take it down. My fault. Just keep it moving. And just defending myself. I should have just let it go, let it rock, and then just, you know, just kept my head high and kept it moving. But I let, like, a few words get to me to the point where I came out of character and, you know, responded, and it just made it so much worse.
Yeah, yeah. And so what was the next 3 weeks like with NBC?
So the next 3 weeks, I just kept my head down. Luckily, I had great advisors there, like from when I was an intern. Like, everybody just always checked on me. They always made sure I was good. It was still a great time. You know, I did what I had to do. I completed my contract, and they just still looked out for me. Like, nobody in the building changed. Of course, there was a few jabbing jokes here and there, like, don't do this.
Newsrooms are a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it's fun.
You know, it was all out of love and everything, because I feel like everybody there did, like, you know, like and love me, because they always had my back no matter what. And they just told me, like, as, you know, as my contract was up when I was leaving, just, you know, learn from this.
Yeah.
You know, just don't let this hold you. Don't let this stop you. Just, you know, take it and go. So when I finished, I just was like, all right, what am I going to do now? And I was like, well, I might just go get my master's.
Mine as well.
So I got in contact with the head sports guy. Ken.
The head sports guy.
I got in contact with Ken Sweeten of the athletic department, sports information director. There we go. I don't know why that slipped. And I knew he was looking for a graduate assistant. My best friend Nick had already took up one of the spots, and they were looking for another one to fill the spot. And you know, I just was like, I just want to go in there, work hard for my 2 years, learn another craft, the public relations craft of sports side.
Yeah.
And, you know, see where it takes me as well. I'll always have my background in journalism. And I feel like after just being 2 years within journalism and feeling behind, as well as dealing with that situation, I needed to learn more. I needed to learn the ins and outs of sports journalism. I needed to know what was right,
like,
what
the practical
wrong.
Stuff, right? Exactly. Like, the stuff that you can't learn until you're on the job.
Exactly. So I feel like that move to grad school just was the best move I could make at the time.
Yeah. So I think what's also kind of cool about your story is, right, the way it ultimately ends, which is not it's not with the, you know, with deleting your Twitter page. It's not with, you know, the articles or finishing your contract. The way it ultimately ends is you win an award for your work.
Yeah. I ended up being part of the group that took home an Emmy, the best transmedia, like, coverage of transmedia, best transmedia sports coverage for the Olympic Games. We were nominated for another one, didn't take it. But what ended up happening, it was crazy because I went through the whole year of grad school. Then the Emmys happened in May. So I'm watching the ceremonies and I'm just seeing, like, you know, who wins and everything. And I see NBC Sports had took home a few. So I was just like,
good for them.
I was like, hey, congrats. Like, congrats to the guys. And I was congratulating everybody. And I was just asking around, like, hey, was I part of the group of that, you know, that took that home? And nobody knew because I was separate. Like, I had my own thing. So
your contract made it confusing?
No, it wasn't my contract because it was still technically, like, full time, even though it was contract. But it was just what I was doing wasn't like, I wasn't part of like the content producers that were putting like different stuff out on the site and on Twitter and everything. I just had my own mobile content thing. I was the only one, you know, doing it. So nobody knew. Nobody could give me an answer. So I waited a little while. I reached out to my old supervisor and I was just like, hey, you know, congrats on the Emmys. I just want to know if I was part of the group that won. I never hear back.
Never.
Now, well, at the time. So I was just like, maybe, so I, like 2 months had went by, I didn't hear back from anybody. So I was just like, maybe that's their way of subtly telling me without having to tell me that I wasn't part of the group, which I understood. Because I was like, you know, I messed up. I was like, you know, this is what I get.
Oops.
So, but time goes on and, you know, it actually, like, I just found out, like, literally, like, a few months ago. I was just going through, like, scrubbing my LinkedIn and just, you know, getting ready to apply for other jobs, you know, getting ready to graduate. And, you know, I just Googled my name because I'm like, I know I did a publication for something. And I'm like, let me just look and see it. I see the NBC thing, you know, where I got in trouble. So I'm like, ugh, still there. Great.
Scrolls past it.
I'm like, that's nice to still see. And then I see Emmy Award winners and I see my name. And, you know, like, it's in black. So I'm like, what that mean? Like, what you talking about?
Can someone tell me?
Somebody explain this? So I opened the article and I'm going through it and it's like the press release of, you know, all the winners from that Emmy group. So I'm going strong through it and I'm like, oh, all right. Oh, so here's where they won. Oh, I worked with this person. Oh, congrats. I didn't know they were part of it. Wait, that's me. Wait, hold up.
That's how you spell my name.
I was like, that's my name. I wanted a what?
That's amazing.
First thing I do is call my moms.
Wait, hold on. So moms knows about the Emmy.
She doesn't know about the backstory. So when I get home later, she's going to be like, oh,
excuse me?
That's what happened. And mind you, like I said, I was away from home during that time because I was living out and I was in the hotel. So, you know, I would call her and talk to her, but I didn't want her to know about that because she would have got so worked up.
Yeah.
And I was like, at some point, I'm going to have to learn how to figure things out on my own.
No, for real.
And I was like, this is a messed up situation, but this is the situation for me to learn on my own.
Yeah. So a couple years ago, I was freelancing for, you know, a number of publications in Connecticut and down in New Jersey. And I uncovered a story. I don't know if you saw this happening. I uncovered a story. Someone had contacted me from Fairfield University.
I remember.
You remember the story where the ghetto party was happening?
Yep. The old white party, right?
Yeah. So like, people are screenshotting the Snapchats and sending it to me, and doing this and doing that. And really, I'm just kind of, you know, doing some journalisms. And seeing what the students of color at Fairfield are posting. And so I write up the story. I run the story. The lead is Fairfield University students of color took to social media Saturday night after Snapchats of what appears to be a ghetto party. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah,
that whole thing was crazy.
Right. We run it in the CT News Junkie. It's a great story. It's getting a lot of attention, right? And when I say it's getting a lot of attention, I mean it's getting a lot.
No, it got national pull.
Right, it got national pull. My name is currently in the New York Times, Cosmo, USC Today.
It was big.
And then the parents of the students started coming for us. Like, this was not what it seems to be. This wasn't a ghetto story. I mean, this wasn't a ghetto party. It was a Guido party. And we're like, oh, you weren't discriminating against this group. You were discriminating against that group.
So it's still wrong.
Right, exactly. And so, I mean, it just, it like, if anybody can empathize with the amount of anxiety in the moment of, like, this is big, this is, like, the gravity of this is huge. Like, this is beyond just me and my desk right now. This is something that has been taken, you know, through the internets, through the interwebs, and has exploded. If anyone can empathize with your story, it's definitely me. But I don't got an Emmy.
I mean, it was dope. I'm still waiting for it to come in the mail. Hopefully it comes my birthday next week.
What do you get?
Well, you get the choice. You can you could get your trophy. But for every nomination, there's a few nomination plaques and certificates. And
nice.
And then for the wins, you get that too. So I have a whole bunch of plaques and stuff to order.
Well, awesome.
To send them up, to send them, like, family and stuff. You know?
That's awesome. That's awesome.
It was just nuts. But for that to be like the saving grace of it all, like, you know, nearly 2 years
later.
That's
a nice little bow.
It was dope.
Yeah. So we're about to wrap up, but mm-hmm. every episode I try to ask my guests the same question. And the question is, what gets you worked up?
What do you mean by worked up?
What do you mean by worked up? No, what gets you worked up, right? You're doing this work. You started off in biomedical sciences or something mm-hmm. medical, and you transitioned into journalism. You had this blunder, but then you had this like blessing to come out of it at the other end.
Oh, gotcha.
Right? So what gets you worked up? Even today, if you were to look back on everything that you're doing, you're going to look forward at the things that you're about to do. What in your life gets you worked up?
Knowing that I'm in control mm-hmm. of what's going on in my life. Knowing that, you know, I have the power to, you know, make the mistakes, to most importantly, learn from them.
Yeah.
And then never make it again. Make those same mistakes again. So mm-hmm. it's just about, I feel like at this point in my life, it's either I win or I learn.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I just can't lose right now. Like, if you learn from your mistakes, if you learn from those losing lessons,
mm-hmm.
then it's not a loss.
I like that, losing lessons. So, I like that.
So I just feel like what gets me worked up now is just like knowing that I'm in control and that I can ultimately decide like what's gonna happen with myself.
Nice. And you got any pieces of advice for young journos coming up behind you?
Yes. Guys, just be careful what you do on social
media.
And ladies. No, I mean guys.
I know what you mean.
I got you. Everybody, ladies, gents, everybody. Be careful what you put on social media. It's gonna live there forever. Trust me. I'm still living for it now. I'm still learning from it. Just protect your own work, be proud of your work, but don't be afraid to share it.
Mm-hmm.
But also be mindful of what other people are doing around you. Like, you know, listen, pay attention. But just don't be afraid to put other people on as well.
Yeah.
I feel like in journalism, I feel like a lot of it is...
It's cutthroat. Especially if you're not talking about the local level. On the local level, I think that there's competition, but on a national level, it's cutthroat.
Yeah, everybody's gunning for each other.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
Like, you can put somebody on, somebody could put you on. Just always be willing to, you know, open your ears, open your heart, open your mind, and just be willing to learn and just move forward.
Awesome. Thank you so much
for
coming on the show. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that wraps up the second episode of our Fail Month series. Next week, we will be catching up with none other than Justin Elliker, whose 2013 run for the mayoralty and subsequent loss cemented Elliker as a household name. Thank you again for tuning into Work It Out with Mercy Quay, your Monday motivation and your weekly invitation to figure out what your passion is and work it out.
Hey. Working. Yeah. I don't have no time. Work it. Yeah. When spring, summer, fall, trouble keep coming out nowhere. Doesn't have respect at all. Somebody going through it somewhere. Wonder what you're gonna do. Wonder if you're gonna make it. Wonder how long it'll take and will you ever get through. Can't see the light of day nowhere. The enemy tried to make you feel like pain on me. But you know, like I know, that trouble will never last. Yeah. So hold your head up high. God is on your side. And he loves you. And he cares. He's so faithful. Work it. Come on. Work it.